Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net runs every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and we go until 11 o'clock or a little bit over that. So lock yourself in and sit back and relax, and I'll do my little beginning spiel, which is that if you have anything to share with us but you can't get on the radio, if you have any questions you'd like to ask, topics you'd like to hear discussed, if you have a puzzle you'd like me to share with the rest of the gang, or if you have anything that you want to relay to me or relay to Paul. If you have any questions regarding space or videos or websites with articles and you want Paul to take a look at it, I will pass on the message. You can get to us by the email address, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that's my call sign, which is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. So it's mailbag@alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. We have a list of links available. Usually they're in relation to something mentioned on the technical net. Sometimes they're interesting YouTubes or websites that I saw that I want to share with people. This week we're doing a little experiment. I always set up a bunch of articles for Science Talk. I never get to them because everything else is going on. So if I don't get to them, I posted them. You could click the links and read the articles at your leisure, or you can bring it up later on tonight if we have free time and we can discuss the topics. So that link page is roy.ac2gs.com. There's a chat room available. You can either go through Limark's own website, and they have links for it, or you can just type in to your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And I am streaming the audio of W2VL 24/7 for the most part. So if you have a friend who can't get on IRLP or Echolink or such, they can't get here by radio, just have them type into the URL, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give them a live feed of W2VL 24/7. Also want to remind people that Mike, AC2NJI, has a wonderful archive of the technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. So you can reach them with amateurradio.tv. That's his website, amateurradio.tv.
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Okay, I just got up to the moment of it timing out, so another success story. As I often remind you, the plans for tonight is that I will ask people for any questions or topics of a technical nature, and write down their first name, their call sign, and we'll try and get it to them one after the other in a timely basis. Around 8:30 or 8:45, we will introduce Andy, WA2CDL, for Andy's Corner. He has another great segment for us, and I'm looking forward to that. When he is done, I will come back and follow up with any of the questions or people that ask questions, or any topics that you might be so inclined to discuss until about 10:15 or so, when we will turn it over to Paul WS2N for the SpaceNet report. So that's the way I see the next few hours going, and I hope you stay tuned and participate. So, once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. Anyone who would like to check into the technical net for questions or comments, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Juan Carlos, KC2TJC.
N2HGN. Just a few things for the science section. I sent you the email.
Okay, JC recognized, Wes recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down?
WA2MAV Mark.
Okay, Mark recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list? Okay, we'll see. Maybe later on there'll be other people with other questions. First up is Juan Carlos, JC. What is your question tonight?
I have a comment. Thank you, Roy, for getting me started with DMR. It's been a while since I haven't been able to figure out how to do it, so you helped me figure it out with last week's question and a lot of emails. I sent you some more emails about a couple of other questions, but with FLDigi, is there a way to identify what modes are being used?
Well, unfortunately, the simple answer is no. I would love to have that feature because I mentioned, I pulled up a page just for the audience that haven't downloaded this excellent suite of software applications, and they're all free and they interwork with each other, and, you know, for the price is certainly right. But just to give you a short list of some of the formats that it decodes and encodes. CW, PSK, FSQ, IFKP, Contestia, Domino EX, Hellschreiber, MFSK, MT63, Navtex, Olivia, QPSK, 8PSK, DSKR, RIDI, SIDOP, THOR, SIDORB, THROB, THROBX, and WEFAX. So it would be really great if there was something that you could just give it a couple of minutes to think about the audio stream and tell you where to set your program. But unfortunately, I think it's beyond the programmers at this point. I think I mentioned last Sunday night that the best that I've ever been able to find is that there are websites with audio files, and the idea is that you listen to the individual audio files and train yourself to recognize the characteristic chirps and musical tones of the different types of modes. But as far as I'm aware, that's the best we got to offer at this time.
WB2KWC with a comma?
Yes, Ken.
Okay. Roy, I believe that feature does exist. It's called, what is it called, Hellschreiber. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, you will see two features that you can turn on, TXID and RXID, which are supposed to identify what the modulation is. That's the good news. The bad news is I have not gotten them to work, and would love some help if someone has.
WS2N. Yes, Paul recognized. I just want to point out that I think, I could be wrong, I think that that is purely for one of the variants of Hellschreiber. Because if you look at the listing for Hellschreiber, they list Field Hell, Slow Hell, Field Hell X5, Field Hell X9, FSK Hell, FSK Hell 105, and Hell 80. So I might be wrong, but I think that selection is only to kind of select the sub-selection of Hellschreiber mode. Paul, you wanted to say something.
Yes, Roy. When you were looking for questions, you doubled with somebody by the name of George. I missed the call, but somebody wanted to get a question in. You might put him on the list. We don't want to lose him. Back to you.
Okay, George out there with a question. I can guess what your call sign is, but if you can tell me, I'd appreciate it.
All right, it's KD2BCQ.
Okay, we have you down, George. Thank you, Paul. So getting back to Ken, I don't know for a fact, but that's my gut feeling, because there's a lot of variance with Hellschreiber, and I remember really looking hard, and if there was a universal what-the-heck-is-this mode switch, I probably, as a programmer, wouldn't hide it under Hellschreiber.
Okay. I will have to do some more research, but I was under the impression that would, providing that the other station was sending out the TX ID. I will do some research and let you know.
Okay, I'd appreciate it, because that would be an incredibly useful feature. One of the most frustrating experiences of my life was to just hear the signal, not have the faintest idea what it was, and try the usual suspects. You know, you try PSK, you try RIDI, and then unfortunately you have to go through everything. And it was just hell and back. So I appreciate you look into that and get back to us one of these Sunday nights. So getting back to you, JC, I don't think that there is readily available anything that does that. The only benefit is that probably 95% of data transmissions amount to three different modes.
KTJC, what are the three different modes that are the most popular then?
Well, the overwhelming, in my experience, has been ST8, which isn't covered by FLDigi. You would need WSJTX to do that. The other is a variant of ST8 called JS8 Call, which is a slightly modified version of ST8 that allows for much more flexible sending of non-standard text, so that you could sort of vaguely ranch you in slow motion. But I put that together with FT8. The other two is PSK and RIDI, RTTY. I've bumped into them enough that I notice them. There are other formats like WeFax you don't see anywhere. It's really designed for the fax, the transmissions of weather satellites, and you know, I could go through the list, but that's the big one, PSK, RIDI, and the big monster is FT8 these days.
Thank you. Is any of these modes popular in 70 centimeter or 2 meter?
Not to my knowledge. Again, if people out there have used a lot of RIDI or FSK, it's possible certainly to run all of these modes on any frequency. But for the most part, the 70 centimeters and 2 meters, you get a lot of FM, you get a little bit of AM, you get a bit of single sideband. But I've never come across. I'd be interested if anyone out there have come across any RIDI or PSK or FT8 that's been sent on 2 meters or 70 centimeters. Okay, nothing heard, so I guess... that's the way it seems to be. I mean, again, there's nothing stopping you from doing it. Any place that allows for data transmissions, you can transmit. It's just that, for the most part, especially FT8 is one of those things that if you want to make a lot of contacts all over the place, even below the noise floor, it's a great mode, and so you want something that's going to bounce somewhat off of the ionosphere. 2 meters and 70 centimeters is more point-to-point. So unless there's a tropospheric ducting or such, you're not really going to get that. So if you go to any of the 20, 40, on a good day, 10, they're all over the place. Right now I'm looking, and there's still activity going on 20 meters. As far as FT8 is concerned, and I'm sure 40 meters and 80 meters is a lot more active tonight. Anything else, JC? Any other questions or variations of the question you just asked or anything?
No, thank you. That was all my other questions for the MD-380, and I sent you that by email. Thank you.
Okay, very good. You know, unless you just sent me, I everything that you sent me, I answered and sent you back. So I'm glad that you get back on digital. I hope you enjoy it. There's a lot of things to explore. There's probably not enough time in the day to explore every permutation there. So have fun. And, you know, if you find any discoveries, come back and tell us about them.
Will do. Thank you, Casey. TJP.
Okay, next on my list is Mark, WA2MAV. What's your question or topic tonight, Mark?
Yes. Good evening, Roy. Yes, this is WA2MAV. A couple of weeks ago, there might have been a topic on lossy transmission lines. I did a little work in that area. I formalized by just a model, mathematically model systems that to create signals digitally and run through vector signal generators so we can test our equipment where it used to work. And one of the languages I used was MATLAB. Well, I since retired and was itching to do something. So I got pretty far with the transmission line model of a low-loss line. And if anybody is interested in that topic, I can expand on it.
Well, Mark, I'm certainly interested in it. What's the nature of this low-loss transmission line?
Okay, yeah. What I did was, what I used to do is I rarely take any equations or anything off the internet without verifying myself. So what I found was there's a lot of models for lossless lines. Everybody knows what the same wave patterns look like. But when it came to the low-loss case where there's attenuation on a line, I didn't see any modeling. I didn't see any good visual displays. I went through YouTube. I said, all right, looks like I can add to that. So I downloaded Octave, which is a free version of MATLAB. Now, MATLAB's used in industry. It's a very expensive package, but Octave isn't too bad. So I started with the elemental transmission line. I went through all the derivations because I wanted to extend it to the low-loss case where, you know, you just don't have the propagation constant. And, you know, you have to take into account the loss one. So I was able to get, you know, models and some good plots and some animations I was able to do in Octave. And I can go into a little more detail. I know everybody sort of shies away from the mathematics, but I'm all about the mathematics, so you got the other end of the spectrum with me. So I could go through some of the results that came from that. That would probably be a general topic that's interested. Is there any interest in that? Over.
Yeah, certainly, Mark. I'm interested. I'm sure other people are. You got to be kind of ginger with the mathematics. We need the mathematics because that's what engineers use to design everything. But it's hidden from most of us because some forms of mathematics can give people nosebleeds. I advise the average amateur radio operator to, if they're very interested in things like antenna theory and such, get the ARRL books and try and stay away from the college electrical engineering books because I've seen people look at matrix math equations and their head looked like it was about to explode. So just keeping those little things in mind, I would love to hear about it.
Okay. I used to give some classes where I used to work also. What I used to have a mixed audience. I used to have managers in there. I used to have engineering technicians, and then I had engineers. So what I used to say is the engineers should understand every line of what I said. The managers, they can listen to what they want. And the engineering technicians, or the ones who don't have the mathematical background, I usually tell them to understand the assumptions that the equations were derived from, and then you jump down to the end of the paper where the results are, and you look at the results. That's how I used to handle it. So what I did was I modeled a low-loss line, and everybody knows when you have a transmission line, and let's say you put a mismatch on one end, you'll get standing waves, which I think a couple weeks ago, I didn't quite know what people got a little confused on that. So what happens on a low-loss line is you lose signal as you go down the line, there's a continuation. What happens is you can have a short circuit on one end, and then you can see the short circuit standing wave patterns, and then they gradually they almost look like double sideband waveforms, and then they almost disappear to a point where at the input of the line it looks like it's a pretty good match, which you would expect when you have a loss on the line. So I have a program that can generate animation. Probably, you know, when I finish them up and I get all the plots the way I want, I can send you them to put up on your website, and you can actually see the animations and how the standing waves build. And the other thing that was missing, well, let me drop it for 1 second. The other things that were missing that I saw on the internet, well, when they show some animations, they didn't put the envelope on. So what I did was I derived the equations for the VSWR envelope, and you know, depending on what you put in for a mismatch load, what you pick is a characteristic impedance, you'll get a different standing wave envelope. For each wave that goes down, it will be bounded by the envelope, but it might be under it. So on my plot, I have the envelope, and you can see as the animations go how the standing waves will fill in or will be bounded by the envelope, which is sort of interesting. So I'm working up this program, and I also have a GUI that goes along with it. That was a little bit of a bear to write, because MATLAB had a GUI builder, and this Oxen had the components, but I had to basically do it manually. So I've been working on this program, and hopefully I'm extending it to a more general case. Right now I have a mismatched load, lossy line, but a match generator. I'm going to work on having that the generator is mismatched to make the next general case of a lossy line. And then we should be able to get some animations out of it, and then all the people that have questions about what happens with VSWR on shorted lines, open lines, low-loss lines, lossless lines, will have a whole bunch of little animations to show that. So that's what I've been working on, Roy. Over.
Okay, I mean that sounds fascinating. You could whip that into a YouTube or something and really give a good demonstration of what's really going on.
It's nice to see it. Like I said, I usually don't embark on anything because someone has done it before. But when it came to you got to put in a class of low loss. If you get a highly lossy line, it's basically a useless structure. And a lot of the equations, in the low loss case, things like the propagation constant and characteristic impedance, they're the same as the Lossless case, or very, very, very close to it. So those are some of the assumptions that go in it. But what I also have in there is a plot of the reflection coefficient, which relates to VSWR, which relates to S11 of the load. I show as you go away from the load that the reflection coefficient, I plot it on a real and imaginary axis. You can see it spiral towards the center, which is matched conditions. The loss would, if you go enough, you have enough transmission line and you send a wave down there, it's never going to come back. And as far as the sending end looks like, oh, it's a perfect match, one-to-one. But that happens because you lose energy as you go down the line. So the reflection coefficient, they spiral into the center. Another thing I have is a 3D plot, which if you had octave, you can manipulate it and take a look at it. You can see it basically looks like a corkscrew in space headed towards, let's say, a reflection coefficient of zero, which is a perfect match. So, you know, I did things like that, and I think a couple of weeks ago, I also modeled PSK-31 modulation and RIDI, and I encoded some words, and I was able to get it to decode on FL-Digi. So that could be a topic for another time if people want to understand how these modulations are produced in software. So it's WA2MAV. Over.
Okay, very good, Mark. If you have a chance, email me some of those animations. I'd love to take a look at them. You know, modulation modes are something that could take up about 5 years of any technical mess. And they can get rather esoteric. I was having a discussion with someone about quadrature amplitude modulated signals, and that's a long topic in and of itself. But, you know, phase shift keying and the way that modern radios are able to transmit and receive binary digital bits and then do magical things with them is a vast topic. So send me what you got so when you get it, when you have a chance, and I'd love to take a look at them.
Okay, yeah, well, modulation was my thing. My final day of work, I'm an expert in constant, continuous phase modulation. So your the FT8 is a class of those. The PSK31 is a class of those. And I had a whole PowerPoint write-up that I did at work when I developed these things. If anybody has any questions, you want to know how they make it, it's not, if you approach it the right way, it's not that complicated. But, I made a signal emulator for IFF waveforms. We had IFF systems, and we had a test that the our interrogators were decoding the replies, right? So I went to the bits, and I calculated the parity, took the bits, and then I modulated it, and then I ended up with IQ waveform files, which we uploaded to a vector signal generator, and to generate those signals at RF. And that's how amateur radio is going to go, because right now there's a card called the Red Pitaya, and it has these things called systems on chip, which have processors, vector modulators, and high-speed D to A and A to D converters. So basically what comes out are the samples of RF. So all that iron that Andy uses to make AM, it's just a simple mathematical manipulation within those chips, and then you just amplify. So that's where radio is going to go when those chips come down in price. Like I said, I can definitely help anybody understand how those things are modulated and the mathematics behind it if they need to. This is WA2MAD.
is AC2GS. Well, that's great. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I have an SCR radio, and I love it, and I've kind of jumped into the technology, and INQ is very much a part of software-defined radios. It uses those two data streams to demodulate everything, and it can do it in reverse as well. So, yeah, I think the future is software-defined radio in one form or another. It'll probably end up being a radio on a chip, and there'll be some disappointed people because it won't be a big, heavy piece of, an anchor, a boat anchor.
It's here now. It's just that the price has to come down. We got to wait for the Arduino of the system on the chip. You want to look into something that's not that far away from the grass. It's called a Red Taya board, and that has a Xilinx RF system on a chip, and it has it has an A to D and D to A. Running at 125 megasamples per second, and that's more than enough to do anything HF. The professional grade one, when I left my job recently, they had a system on a chip that had converters running at 10 gigahertz, and it's all within one chip, so you don't have to worry about transporting the digital streams around. It's all within one chip, so it's all programmed. So basically it comes out, put a reconstruction filter on, and you amplify and filter, and that's all that's left. LNAs and power amp and antennas. That's what's going to be left for a radio in the not too far future. That'll be what you want to do.
Yeah. Like I said, I agree with you. I'm just looking at my Flex 6700. It has two massive field programmable gate arrays, and it has some A and D converters. And I remember talking to Dick K2RIW, and he was fascinated that it was decoding and demodulating so much data. He was concerned that I might melt my silicon chip.
A lot of manipulations go on there. Unfortunately, I didn't get into the programming of the FPGA. I used to have, in a digital group, I was more of a system designer, and I worked out the mathematics, and they implemented my algorithm. But I didn't have a chance. But my last years, I made a vector modulator. It was done digitally, but at baseband, we just had INQ that was turned into analog, and it was analog all the way up through the chain after that. And then 20 years later, we did all the quadrature up conversion. It's done digitally, which has a lot of advantages because you don't have to worry about IQ balance, amplitude balance, problems with matching filters. It's all done digitally. So like I said, I'm not an overall expert in it, but I had my hands in it, and I understand the mathematics behind it. So if you want to make other topics in the future, I can certainly contribute to that area.
Well, Mark, I would love to. I mean, I'm deeply interested, as I said, in most things technological, especially radios, especially software-defined radios, going all the way from Taylor detectors to more sophisticated devices that synthesize their own IQ from one signal. So I look forward to chatting with you about these things. Stay tuned, and send me email if you get these things, and if I can put them up on the website, I'd be more than happy to.
Okay, yeah, I'm just about ready to release some of those waveforms. getting the presentation is everything. And unfortunately, we're talking on the radio, so as you know, I can't really show the presentation, but if we get it on your website, people can take a look at those animations, at least for what I did there. And like I said, I can do other things with signal processing. That used to be my thing, and fortunately, Octave exists, so I can do do the same analysis I used to do at work when I had MATLAB seat that was like about $3,000 to $4,000. But people should embrace the mathematics. I think in last month's QST or the month before, there was an article on complex numbers that which you really got to get under your belt before you move ahead. But you know, not everybody can handle that, and I appreciate that. That's why I'm going to make those animations so people can see what's going on, at least in you know the transmission line. I can do the same thing with the signals. I said that would be my thing.
Okay, very good. I look forward to it. Yeah, illustrations, you know, mathematics is wonderful. I love math. But again, it frightens some people, and it's a bit of a speed bump for some people. And, you know, it's like the old adage that one picture is worth a thousand words. And unfortunately, to many people, same goes with mathematics. I was looking into QAM, and there is some... they're not complicated, but they could frighten people, some underlying mathematics, but then there's also... diagrams and illustrations that are much easier to consume. So pictures are very useful for the general public.
Yeah, QAM, basically is not difficult. It's the concept of pole shaping that might confuse people. Like I said, there was an article on FT8. I looked at that, and it's an eight-tone, continuous, a Gaussian-shaped, continuous phase FSK. I actually wrote a program to create that waveform, and I compared it to the article. That was actually an extension on what I used to do at work. I used to use, it was just two-state MSK, and this was eight-level MSK, but it's actually very simple. You've got to understand if you make phase ramps, the slope of the ramp is the different frequencies. So all you're making are these ramps, and if they're pointy on the end, you knock off the edges, and that controls the bandwidth, and that's just the pole shaping it. So, yeah, you know, like I said, when the time comes, I can actually create some plots and talk about that the topic on how these things are synthesized. But can't do it all in one night. So I'll just send it back to you, Roy. WAQMAD.
No, you can't do it all in one night. And as Dick used to say when he... was sort of sense that he was repeating a question and answer he had answered many times before. Sometimes the first time people don't quite get it, so the second time they might get it a little bit better, and the third time they might get it even better. So thank you, Mark, and like I said, please send me what you would like to share, and I'll take a look at it, and don't be a stranger here.
Okay, will do. So, wait, I may be on the side.
Okie doke. George, BZQ, you have a question or a topic tonight?
Sure do. It's past 8:30. Do we need to talk to Andy?
Well, it depends on the question. Is it a real short one, or do you have a little time, and we'll go to Andy then?
It's a question about antenna placement. I moved an antenna, and I'm not sure of the results. I can't explain it because I have no experience. I was just wondering if I could explain, you know, describe what I did and see if anybody can give me some feedback. But I have time to wait.
Okay, so we'll summon Andy from his corner, And when he's done, we'll get back to you, George. So Andy out there with Andy's Corner, please come on board.
Okay, very good. There's no static tonight, so that's a good thing on the repeater. And hello, this is Andy's Corner. My name is Andy, WA2CDL. Is the call, and I want to thank Mark for coming on and giving his little dissertation. Yeah, and I guess, you see, as Mark understands, I'm doing this this corner on a non-mathematical basis because it's a very basic dissertation on different topics that I've been talking about, you know, just to reiterate, you know, why I started doing this is just to get people familiar with what's out there and the different aspects of amateur radio besides just talking from point A to point B. Because like Mark just said, you know, there's a lot to it. And the laws of Mother Nature's laws and the laws of physics and so on hold true. And all Maxwell's equations and so on. We could talk a lot about in-depth topics. So basically, I'm just using some books here just to give everybody listening here an idea of you know how things work and why they work and so on. So it's not an engineering course by a long shot, as Mark can understand. I appreciate you know people who use the mathematical end of it. I've used MATLAB a long time ago. I guess maybe back in the 90s or so. And I've even played around with something that Mark is familiar with. It's you know signal processing, a finite impulse response filter, an FIR filter, and how they work and so on, and that gets a little bit mathematical. But, you know, as I get older, the brain doesn't work as quickly as it used to. So. And you forget. I forgot quite a bit because I don't work with it. But I'm still fascinated by it. So that's where it's at. You know, the fascination doesn't go away, but everything else does is, you know, as time moves on. So with that, let me let it drop. And I'm going to talk about a topic that we've been talking about, started a few weeks ago, on antennas and propagation. And I'll continue the discussion. The last week, the discussion was interesting because... talking about different waves and how they travel and where they travel, as you know, for instance, a ground wave as opposed to sky waves, as opposed to ducting waves, and you know all the different ways that waves can travel through space and through the air, and the different layers and the ionization of the waves and how the sun affects that and so on. So I touched on that again, you know, on a non-mathematical format. So, I think we got a guy in Los Alamos also listening. I forgot his call because he signed in earlier, or I heard him on the air. So, let me say hello to him. I forgot your name, and if you haven't heard, this is Andy's Corner. All right, so let me just hold on. It's 8:45, and I guess I'll give about 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes, I guess around 9:30 or so, and we'll talk a few pages here this is the characteristics of the radio frequency spectrum, and I'll do it slowly, so people can get an idea of what goes on. You know, again, there are some diagrams, there are some illustrations that they show, but again, it's, you know, without a PowerPoint presentation like like Mark just mentioned, you have to sort of visualize it in your head and so on. So basically, the characteristics of the radio frequency spectrum. And here we go. The radio frequency spectrum used by all types of transmitting stations extends over a frequency range of about 15 kHz to 30,000 megacycles. Let's see, 15 kHz, that's a pretty low frequency, to 30 gigs or so. 30,000 megacycles, yeah. Let's see here. Okay, I'm just looking at something over here, just to get my my bearings straight. All right, there are many communications, entertainment, and special service channels within the usable spectrum. The frequency assignments of the various stations are made according to the type of information to be sent and the type of service performed. The characteristics of certain parts in this spectrum are better for aircraft, maritime, navigation, and broadcast radio, while other parts of the spectrum are better for overseas communications, and still other parts are better for television. All right, they show a figure here, which how the spectrum is divided. So, you know, basically we know that HF, most people who have a license know the HF band goes from basically 160 meters to, on HF, 10 meters or so. It actually extends, this is considered to be VHF, which is very high frequency. But the chart here shows the megacycle range and the frequency bands from very low to super high. And we are in right now the VHF band, which is 30 to 300 megs. And 300 megs to 3,000 megs, which is 3 gigs, is ultra high. And then 3,000 to 30,000 is 30 gigs, which is super high. That's a pretty high frequency, a 30 gig signal. And there were other books on that, of course, discussions of high frequencies. So that's how the spectrum, the bands are spread out. So we're going to start with very low and low frequency propagation. Yeah, by the way, does anybody have any questions so far? Okay, everybody's listening with a lot of intent. Okay, good. So the characteristics of both the very low and low frequency bands are similar. So we will consider both at the same time. These bands, especially the VLF band, are used for long-distance communications. The signal is carried almost entirely by ground waves. The sky wave is absorbed by the atmosphere, by the ionosphere. I'll just say that again. The signal is carried almost entirely by ground waves on a very low frequency, VLF band. The sky waves are absorbed by the ionosphere. The range over which a low-frequency signal can be sent depends on the power fed to the transmitting antenna, the signal frequency, and the ground conductivity. Since the conductivity of seawater is very high, the range of low-frequency propagation over seawater is great, which we've proven that before. As we go to a lower frequency, we've seen the broadcast band, we see how that ground wave works over water. Consequently, maritime and aircraft services, weather stations, and and other point-to-point communications use both very low and low frequencies. So again, you got the very low frequency range and you got the low frequency range as that distinction. Another advantage of low frequency propagation is that, and I have this underlined here, is that the received signal strength is almost independent of night and day, seasonal and yearly atmospheric and weather variations. Okay, so there's an advantage right there because it's independent. It's not dependent on your seasonal and your nighttime, your daytime, your yearly atmospheric and everything else. It's all mainly done by ground waves. Okay, so now that's low frequency, or very low frequency. Now we're going to talk about medium frequency propagation. So we didn't get into HF yet, which is where we are on the HF band. But we'll talk about medium frequency propagation. The standard AM broadcast band is in the middle of the medium frequency band. Throughout the frequency band, both ground waves and sky waves are important. During the day, the sky waves are absorbed by the D and E layers. As you recall, we spoke about the different layers and the heights of the layers and the absorption and the reflection that they create. At night, when the D and E layers have disappeared, and that's because of the sun, there will be a sky wave reflection from the F layer. At all times, this ground wave will be quite strong at distances from about 25 to 100 miles from the station. You probably noticed it, because I've noticed it many times in your broadcast band at night, you can hear radio stations from far away. Not local, you can hear out-of-state radio stations. How many people, by a show of hands, how many people have heard that? Probably quite a few.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, George, I know you raised your hand. Okay, you've heard it.
Yeah, I was in Florida in 1976, and I heard WABC AM coming out of New York. I was in Florida, and I heard it in the middle of the night, nice and clear.
Yeah, I used to listen to stations up in Canada at night, and if I tuned around on my shortwave radio, which I have here, I can probably hear them right now as we speak. So, not surprising. Okay, thanks, George. Let me continue. Okay, because both the day and ground waves must be considered, reception of a broadcast station depends on both the distance between the transmitter and the receiver and the time of day. Close to the station, the ground wave will be very strong and reception will be reliable 24 hours a day. This is known as the primary service area of the station. The sky wave serves a secondary area that begins some distance beyond the primary. The secondary area receives very little signal during the day, but gets a good, usable signal at night. Between the primary and secondary area is a region served by both ground and sky waves. This region is called the fading area. This area is covered by the ground waves in the daytime and receives quite good service. However, when the D and E layers disappear after sunset, some sky wave signals arrive. The nighttime receiving conditions for broadcast stations are shown here. There's an illustration which actually shows the distance and how the sky waves reflect the signal back down to Earth from the transmitting antenna. So you got your primary area, your fading area, and your secondary area. each area being a certain distance from the transmitting antenna. And then, of course, your ground wave, which covers just about up to the secondary area. Beyond that point where the secondary area starts, now you're depending on sky waves, because you're further away, your distance is further away, so now you're totally dependent on that. So as I describe the illustration, as this illustration shows, the ground wave and sky waves travel different distances before arriving at a receiving antenna in the fading area. Therefore, the two waves do not necessarily arrive in phase. Depending on the phase difference, the two signals may add together or they may cancel each other. It is apparent then that throughout this region, the signal at night has a different strength from the signal during the day. And by the way, radio stations change their power levels purposely because of that. I know that for a fact. Some FM broadcast stations, even on the FM band, do it also. They change their power level. You've noticed as propagation changes, sometimes you can hear two radio stations at the same time. So, yeah, and radio station will do that purposely. We'll change the power because of that. Okay? Alright, so where did I leave off? So the two, as I just mentioned, the two signals either add together or may cancel each other. It is apparent then that throughout this region, the signal at night has a different strength than the signal during the day. Furthermore, the signal strength at night is not constant. At sunset, the electron density and layer height change quite rapidly. The sky wave path then changes in length to the phase difference between the ground and the sky wave path then changes in length, so the phase difference between ground and the sky wave changes. These changes are sometimes so rapid that they cause the signal to appear to flutter. And you probably heard that too. Sometimes you hear distortion, you can't understand what the guy's saying, sometimes you hear flutter, and so on. At some locations, the fading and fluttering conditions may be seasonal, occurring only for a few months of the year. Okay, so there you have a basic overall view of what happens in the medium wave band. So now we're going to talk about HF. This is high frequency propagation, and this is where our ham band starts. Our amateur band for the HF band starts. We also have a frequency on a very low frequency that we can operate. I think I have any meters, that is, converting it to meters. What is that, 3,000 meters or so? I'm just curious. I've seen articles in QST, Roy, people building antennas for the very low frequency band because we can operate there, but with low power. You remember what meters that is? Because I'm not, well, actually, hold on a second. I should look this up. It's, 20,000 to 10,000 meters. Or 20,000 meters, or 10,000 meters to 1,000 meters. Let's see, 0.3 to 3 is medium. So we do have a ham band down there, that I recall, although I've never operated on those bands, which would be interesting to experiment.
Andy?
Yes, you looked it up.
Yeah, it says it's 2,200 meters is 135 kilohertz, and the other is 630 meters. That's about 472 kilohertz.
And we are allowed to operate on those bands, correct?
Yes, with limitations. Lower frequency, I think it's 1 watt EIRP, and the higher one, you can get as much as 5 watts.
Yeah, something to play with. I've never had the curiosity to experiment down there, but I've seen articles in QST of these huge helical wound antennas that